today on Annenberg Radio News.
And that look, cool but disarming, is the secret to Jonathan's superpower.
Listen to how one student uses mistaken identity to his advantage. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News. For Wednesday, November 5th, I'm Carrie Poppy. Throughout the country, pundits, politicians, and voters are pondering the meaning of the midterm election results. The Republican Party captured control of the U.S. Senate and widened its majority in the House. President Barack Obama pledged today to work with the Republicans. Here in California, there was a low voter turnout of only 34%. It was even lower in L.A. County at just over 25%. Here's Kelly O'Mara with a recap of the results.
Concerns about a shortage of water and money drove voters to overwhelmingly approve Propositions 1 and 2. Prop 1 authorizes a $7 billion water bond, while Prop 2 creates a rainy day state fund. Criminal sentences were also lightened when voters approved Proposition 47. But the electorate rejected a plan to give the state insurance commissioner the power to approve insurance rates. They also voted down an increase in the amount of medical malpractice awards. And voters said no to expanding tribal lands to build a casino. One of the most hotly contested state races was for superintendent of public instruction. Incumbent Tom Torlakson declared victory over fellow Democrat Marshall Tuck. In L.A., State Senator Ted Lieu will be taking over Henry Waxman's congressional seat in the 33rd District. And in State Senate District 26, which includes USC, Ben Allen overwhelmingly beat Sandra Fluke. Former State Senator Sheila Kuhl beat Bobby Shriver to replace Zev Zarzlosky on the L.A. County Board of Supervisors. Kelly O'Mara, Annenberg Radio News.
Long Beach Police Chief Jim McDonnell is the new sheriff of Los Angeles County. He defeated Undersheriff Paul Tanaka to become the first sheriff elected from outside the department in a century. McDonnell told Annenberg Radio that although some call him an outsider, he's still part of the LA policing family. He said his greatest challenge will be to restore public trust in the sheriff's department. California voters overwhelmingly approved Proposition 47, which will change low-level drug and theft crimes from felonies to misdemeanors. This is expected to save the state millions of dollars. And as Latifa Alhaza reports, Prop 47 supporters want to make sure the money goes to the right places.
Proposition 47 passed by a 58-42% margin. The prop could make up to 10,000 California inmates eligible for resentencing.
In Los Angeles, it's been said that about 2,000 to 7,000 jail beds will be freed because of this proposition.
Diana Zuniga is an organizer for Californians United for a Responsible Budget.
So I think with that, the state and all of the 41 out of 58 counties that are attempting to build more jails and prisons should really halt any sort of expansion or construction proposals of these facilities, because this can drastically impact the population that would be incarcerated in them.
The new reform says the money taxpayers usually spend to incarcerate inmates will now go to funding victim services, school programs, and drug treatment facilities. It's estimated Prop 47 will save $150 to $250 million a year. 65% of the savings will go to the Board of State and Community Corrections. Inmate advocates want to make sure the money doesn't go to building more prisons. Patrice Cullors is the director of Dignity and Power Now.
And our main goal is to ensure that the money doesn't end up back into the hands of the Board of Corrections or Sheriff Departments, but rather ends up in the hands of communities that can, you know, really focus on restorative justice.
But the BSCC says its goal is to reduce the prison population. Communications Director Tracy Cohn says the BSCC will do what Californians want them to do with the money.
You know, people label us as a jail building agency, but we have a variety of programs that we also administer that are aimed at reducing recidivism and preventing crime.
California has been struggling with a bloated prison system. Advocates and organizers are hopeful the passing of Prop 47 is the first step towards fixing this. Latifa Alhaza, Annenberg Radio News.
Four states approved a minimum wage hike in yesterday's election, and San Francisco voters approved an increase to $15 an hour. LA Mayor Eric Garcetti has been proposing a Los Angeles minimum wage hike. The mayor said in a statement today that his plan would allow working families to lift themselves out of poverty and tie the minimum wage to the cost of living. Today, President Obama encouraged Congress to also act to raise the national minimum wage, prodded by voters in the four states that approved increases.
And that'll give about 325,000 Americans a raise in states where Republican candidates prevailed. So that should give us new reason to get it done for everybody.
Nebraska is raising its minimum wage to $9 per hour, while South Dakota's and Arkansas's will rise to $8.50. The minimum wage in California is already $9 per hour. An initiative to raise that to $12 in California was originally intended for yesterday's election, but the measure was killed back in March when supporters couldn't gather enough signatures to qualify for the ballot. The LA Board of Supervisors met this morning to recommend that the fire department recruit more women. At LAFD's Station 13, firefighter Margaret Stewart is proving the job isn't just for men. Sarah Zahedi reports.
When Margaret Stewart decided to become a firefighter 9 years ago, she says she was looking for camaraderie and to serve her community.
I was looking for something where I felt like it mattered that I went to work every day.
Five, heart problem.
Stewart was once in the military and then joined the corporate sector. Her brother was a firefighter, so she says she grew up around smoke jumpers. She says many women are put off by the stereotype that firefighters are usually big, strapping men. The stats back her up. Women make up just 3% of Los Angeles Fire Department's firefighters.
Women should understand that it's an option, it's an opportunity. A lot of women don't think that it would even be an option for them.
Stewart says the qualities that make a person a good firefighter go beyond gender.
You need to be fit, you need to be strong, you know, good common sense, a hard worker. Those are the things that are far more important than what gender are you.
Assistant Professor Anna Morocco of Sociology at Loyola Marymount University says the stereotype of a macho firefighter persists, and that drives women away from the field.
There is an expectation that firefighters are going to be strong physically and brave, and I'm not saying that women are not these things. There's a perception that those are not always qualities that women have.
Stewart says she's always ready for the next call. Sarah Zahedi, Annenberg Radio News.
Tinder is known as a woman-friendly dating app, yet its co-founders have been accused of sexual harassment. Tinder's parent company just demoted CEO Sean Rad after settling a sexual harassment suit filed against him and co-founder Justin Mateen. Phoenix So has reaction from users and Silicon Valley experts.
The concept is simple. Connect your Facebook profile to the Tinder app and watch singles in your area pop up. If you like who you see, swipe your finger to the right on the picture frame. It has to be mutual. Someone has to swipe you back. And swipe to the left and they're a goner. Out of sight, out of mind. This simple dating app has created a company worth $1.5 billion. But now its very creators may be a hindrance on the company's growth. Trouble started when Whitney Wolf, a woman high up in the company, filed a lawsuit alleging that she'd been sexually harassed by Tinder co-founder Justin Mateen. And yesterday, CEO Sean Rad was demoted after being named in the lawsuit for knowing about the harassment and not intervening. Some Tinder users are concerned, like USC grad student Michael Frank. He wants to separate the CEO's behavior from the company.
It's an interesting story related to kind of the nature of this application, that it's, you know, kind of promotes, you know, relationships or socialization. So in that case, it does get hard to really separate the two, and I think it does reflect poorly on the organization and the app itself.
In a statement to ARN, Tinder insisted that Rad's demotion was unrelated to the lawsuit. Rather, it had to do with the company's rapid growth. We asked USC business professor and Silicon Valley expert Kyle Mayer what he thinks this move indicates.
So, to the extent that you're trying to present an image of the company that is very accessible, open, and respectful of different, you know, people, then I think this also plays into that strategy also. Because does this move, given how high Tinder is flying right now, would have been very hard to justify without the lawsuit.
Rad will stay on as CEO until his successor is named. Phoenix So, Annenberg Radio News.
tonight is going to be a cool 57 degrees, and tomorrow we will spike back up to the 90s. But tomorrow evening will cool off with a low of 59, and all sunny days this week through Sunday. Later on Annenberg Radio News, hear about how interactive art takes a haunting turn. Today, Detours asks the question, what's your superpower? Journalism student Jonathan Tolliver told reporter Matt Heller that his involves a case of mistaken identity and, of course, having a little swag.
The first time I saw my friend Jonathan, I had two thoughts. One, I like that guy's hair. And two, have I seen this guy before? It turns out I'm not alone.
Yeah, if I'm like walking around Hollywood, I'll just get weird looks and I'm like, you think I'm somebody that I'm not. You think you maybe saw me on television one time. You think I'm The Weeknd or something like that.
The Weeknd is the name of an indie R&B singer. And Jonathan totally looks like an indie R&B singer. I've been struggling with how to describe Jonathan's look, and the best I can come up with is somewhere on the spectrum between intelligent hipster and a younger, blacker, tamed-down David Bowie. He's tall and lean, he wears lots of floral patterned shirts that occasionally show lots of chest, and he just generally looks like a band's bass player who is totally down to chill after the show. And that look, cool but disarming, is the secret to Jonathan's superpower.
My superpower, and I'm not good at many things, but is getting into clubs and bars without paying the cover.
Here's how it works. Jonathan goes out a lot, and he knows the ins and outs of a lot of venues. Take, for example, the Echoplex in Silver Lake.
A lot of times at the Echo, if you want to go to the Funky Soul Dance Party, you can just say, oh, can I use your ATM? And then you just walk down the stairs because there's no one guarding it.
And then he lets his, do I know that guy, look take over.
So people just assume, oh, this guy's performing. Or, oh, this guy is some sort of like tangentially related to this event.
The thing is, Jonathan actually is in a band, an R&B band based out of Minneapolis. But he hasn't done a lot as a solo act in Los Angeles yet. So when he's in LA and people think they recognize him, it makes him feel, well, kind of underachieving.
Well, out here, I am just my band, so there's nothing. But when I'm in Des Moines, I tell you what, I walk around like royalty, like I own the place.
For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Matt Heller.
The Natural History Museum is opening a contemporary Latin folk art exhibit featuring the great masters from Latin America and Spain. The exhibit is called Great Masters of Ibero-American Folk Art. It toured Latin America before coming to Los Angeles. The debut will feature more than 800 works from Latin America and Spain and includes a day of festivities. All of the artists in the exhibit are living and working today. Program coordinator Marisol Rojas says the show is amazing.
It's really bright and colorful, but also it demonstrates the amount of creativity that artists have within this area we call Iberoamerica. So,
the museum will also host artisan workshops and cultural events, and visitors will get to enjoy handmade tortillas and tamales. Rojas says the content of the show will have broad appeal.
There are stories that are found in this work that I think anybody can relate to, family, celebrations, and things of that sort that I think anybody from any background will connect with when they see it and just be really impressed by the beauty of the work.
The exhibit kicks off Sunday and ends on September 15th of 2015. A small gathering of protesters demonstrated outside the Mexican consulate today. They demanded that officials release information about the 43 missing students in the Mexican state of Guerrero. Amanda Skurlock reports.
Juan Jose Gutierrez represents Full Rights for Immigrants Coalition. He says that it's unacceptable that nearly a month has passed since the students were allegedly kidnapped by Mexican law enforcement authorities, and there has been virtually no information at all released about them.
And to date, we don't know where they are. We don't know if they're dead or alive. We don't know anything. What we do know is that there is no question in any Mexican's mind that the direct culprits of this human rights crime is the government.
Iguala City Mayor Jose Luis Abarca and his wife were arrested yesterday after a month-long search in a modest Mexico City neighborhood. They fled after widespread protests following the disappearance of the students. Guadencio Velez, president of the Federación de Clubes Independencias de Guerrero in California, was once a student at Guerrero University, the same school as the missing students.
Well, this situation is a nightmare for everybody now, because we know he was arrested yesterday, but all our questions, nobody has the answers. We asking to the federal government, the local government, the state government, but nobody wanted to talk anything about it.
Gabriel Palacios is president of Club Garense Rio Balsas. According to Palacios, the organization and many of their members are from the states of Guerrero. He believes that the government in Mexico knows what has happened to the students, but is refusing to tell.
We need clear answers. We need the truth. We need our students alive or dead. We need it. It's not right.
The kidnappings caused the biggest wave of protests in Mexico in decades. Mexican activists here expect more to come. Amanda Scurlock, ARN News.
University of Southern California alum Andrew Lowy is one of the newest members of the prestigious Los Angeles Philharmonic. Lowy is only 27, and he's now playing second clarinet in the famous orchestra. I spoke to him about how his studies in linguistics inform his performances. Tell me about how you feel like linguistics actually contributes to your performance.
Okay, so my undergrad, I studied linguistics, and I would say people often will kind of say there's a connection between language and music. Music is a kind of language. I don't know if I think about it quite in that way, but when I'm thinking about how to phrase music, I think very much about how a speech is well constructed and how a great orator is able to connect sentences. And it's the same way that in music, I think you need to connect phrases, and in order to create a coherent, effective whole performance, it relates into how different sentences relate to each other. And when I was learning a little bit about Hungarian, I learned that in Hungarian, the first syllable of every word is stressed. And a lot of Hungarian-influenced music, you'll notice that there's always this figure that goes, ba-ba. So the stress is always on the first syllable. For me, it's much easier to understand it as opposed to just notes on a page.
I guess you must think of concerts as sort of having a conversation with all the other musicians.
Sure, that's another aspect of it. Certainly in chamber music, when you're performing with a small group of people, it is very conversational. And ideally in orchestra as well, even though there are 100 people on stage, there should be communication.
Yeah, you know, as a non-musician, that kind of surprises me, because I look at notes on a page and I think everything's so set out for you, you know, the length of how long you play that and exactly how soft you're supposed to play it and, you know, exactly what tone it's supposed to be. And I'm like, where's the room to have the conversation?
Yeah, I would say I would think about the notes on the page more as if it's a script of a play. There's so much that goes on in addition to just the words on the page and the stage direction that makes it into, you know, a powerful work of art. And I think it's the same way. Music is just as kind of bare bones in the notes on the page. It's how you bring it to life that really makes a difference.
So what was that like when you went into audition for the Philharmonic? Was that sort of a surreal experience?
It's pretty stressful, I would say. I've taken a bunch of orchestral auditions before, so you kind of get used to the process. But every time it's slightly different. The audition for me stretched over a whole week. Final round was on a Friday for me, and that was definitely the most stressful, the most involved. So you see the music director is there for the first time, so Gustavo Dudamel is out there in the audience, and the committee of musicians from the LA Phil, about 12 people are out there listening to you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the stakes are very high, so it can be kind of nerve-wracking.
Well, we can't wait to see you there. All right, well, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was Andrew Lowy, USC grad and second clarinet at the LA Philharmonic. Immersive art is becoming more common in cities like New York City and Los Angeles. It fully involves participants through all senses and stirs emotion. Belinda Kai spoke to two local artists who created an innovative experience that both scares and entertains on a deeper level.
People seek out haunted houses and scary movies for the adrenaline rush. But what if there's an experience that goes beyond that? That taps into your psyche and your most instinctive human fears. Alone, an existential haunting is that kind of experience. Co-creator Lawrence Lewis walks us through Alone.
Well, Alone is basically it's a artistic and immersive exploration of fear, loneliness, and self-preservation. And it's a site-specific immersive theater event where you go in by yourself, one at a time. And it's the structure of a haunted house, but we don't really use any of the Halloween things like fake blood or monsters or chainsaws or anything like that.
It begins with guests entering a dark and secluded alleyway just moments away from Skid Row. The alleyway leads to a sweatshop-turned art gallery where the event takes place. Junis Zari is a self-proclaimed adrenaline junkie who thrives on experiences like this. He is about to enter.
I heard some crazy things. I expect that I will be scared and that some weird stuff will happen and, you know, you're in a dark room by yourself and some old man or some kid's crying and you have to help them and then you just get pulled and your head gets covered and all that kind of stuff that just keeps your adrenaline at the highest level.
Before participants go in, they sign a waiver giving actors the freedom to touch and physically engage them.
But you know you're safe. You have that safe word at the end of the day. These are actors and performers. But it's only the first 5 minutes that I'm always very tempted to use that safe word. And then once I push through that first couple of minutes, I'm fine.
When asked if he is still scared, Zadi says,
a little nervous.
While guests may be nervous or afraid, co-creator Devin Paulson says that Alone is not just about fear.
It's experience-based, and we explore a whole range of emotions. And people going through tend to have a great time on top of being scared at times, on top of having, like, laughter is a common thing, and uncomfortableness, being unnerved is good, all of those things.
I met Zadi on the other side of Alone. Guests end up in a speakeasy located within the gallery. He had a drink in his hand to decompress from what just happened. Zadi's face is covered in paint.
Painter's face was some stinky creature in one of the rooms we crawled into that started taking stuff from its face and putting it on our face. It was a little gross and it smelled like a real stinky smell.
The creators intend to expand Alone into a year-round project as well as work on other immersive art and theater concepts that push the envelope and provide an introspective form of entertainment. Belinda Kai, Annenberg Radio News.
Now we check in with Maddie Mills to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision. Hi, Maddie.
Hi. So tonight we're going to be talking about Harvard University. They're hosting their annual Sex Week this week, having classes about anal sex and sexuality in general. So pretty interesting stuff.
All right. Sounds edgy. We'll catch it. Thanks, Maddie. The LA City Council declared Saturday Norman Lloyd Day, honoring the legendary actor. Norman Lloyd is known for his role in Alfred Hitchcock's spy movie Saboteur, especially for the scene where his character dangles by a sleeve from the Statue of Liberty.
Can you get a grip with your feet?
I can't.
Let's just say things didn't turn out well for his character. The actor turns 100 this weekend. That's it for this Wednesday. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Carrie Poppy.